probably doesn't need saying about it anyway. In the name of scientific inquiry, bashing archaeological artifacts against the wall, not to be recommended.
I wasn't advocating.
Well, I wrote just saying, and I'm sure Dan's not going to tell us a similar story. So I'm going to hand you over now to Dan Lee before we take us up to our tea and coffee. So you've got that job, Dan.
Great. Well, thanks very much. thanks very much for putting this on, because I think archaeology and storytelling are really, really close. And actually, I think archaeology is all about telling stories. You know, the past has actually gone, and we can only tell its stories. So I think this is really important. It's good to kind of bring that to a fore. Whether you like it or not, however much evidence you base your stories in, you are still telling stories. So when I thought, what shall I talk about when I was asked to talk tonight, I thought, well, we've had some of it tonight. Caroline mentioned the oft-asked questions that you get asked as an archaeologist throughout your career. I started to think about those, and I do a lot of outreach work throughout my career, and you get asked a lot of different questions from a lot of different age groups and stuff, and you think, well, there's the kind of classic ones, like, you know, what's the oldest thing you've ever found? What's the most expensive thing you've ever found? Have you ever found any gold? No, I have never found any gold. If you find any gold, can we go halves on it? Have you found any treasure? But the classic one is just, what's the best thing you've ever found? Which is kind of quite an open-ended question, because what is the best thing could be completely different to different people. So I thought, well, I'll just maybe take you on a little bit of a journey through some of my best finds, because they have changed and they, as I've gone on, and obviously find more things, and also kind of develop and grow as an archaeologist, if you like. Your opinion changes. So I thought I'd just take you through a few of those, and then I'm going to kind of end with something that I thought, well, I'll pick something that kind of stands for my best thing now, and I'll come on to that later. But when I was a student, I think one of my most kind of inspiring and slightly kind of challenging finds was when we were doing our training excavations in the Yorkshire Wolds, digging some Iron Age stuff on the top of the hill and learning how to trowel and doing all the things you do when you're training to be an archaeologist. And we found this sort of shallow sort of feature like this, and we're digging down in there, and we realised it was actually a grave. And we're on the high walls by a crossroads, and we soon realise this is the grave of a very old, very small woman. We needed to excavate this in one day. In Yorkshire, there are people that go around and they kind of try to reclaim bones and bury them under a Christian burial as well, which is slightly kind of, you know, challenging when you're an archaeologist, so you have to try and finish stuff within a day. So we were under the pressure to finish excavating this skeleton within a day. You know, none of us have really experienced this before. You know, we've been trained how to be archaeologists by the supervisors. So. And of course, it takes quite a long time. You have to do like recording. So we ended up doing this, you know, by car headlight at night. And you're just like, you know, trying to finish this off. And you're just thinking, whoa, should I be doing this? Who is this woman? On the crossroads, maybe there's some kind of like, and then maybe she's a witch, or, you know, you know. And so, you know, these things kind of like, you know, they challenge you, and you kind of, you know, you get over these experiences, and then you encounter your other, you know, more skeletons and things like that, you move on. And, but there's some other finds that, you know, found when I was, you know, trained to be an archaeologist, at kind of research excavation stuff. Found a Roman coin once when I first started being in commercial archaeology, which is where you sort of work in advanced developments, you're not necessarily going to find the nicest things. I thought, well, you know, I kind of worked for a few years, and am I even going to find any gold? You know, what is this? What is the value in some of these things? And, well, then I said, well, actually, you know, I'm not actually interested in that. And I think, and I still think, you know, things like treasure and gold, you find these big hoards that are found, and you think, actually, yes, they're beautiful, yes, they're kind of very significant, but there's a whole backstory to that. They often mean, you know, violence, war, you know, there's a lot of people have died to put that hoard in that one place, probably. So I kind of thought, actually, you know what, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the everyday stories, in the kind of day-to-day kind of things, the things that people, when you ask what is your best find, people don't necessarily kind of like, kind of agree. And as my career went on, I said, finding some quite interesting things like more skeletons and beautiful Bronze Age kind of crouch burials with beaker burials with beakers, and flint daggers and stuff, you know, amazing things. But I kind of realised that actually a lot of these things I am more interested in every day, so I started to get a bit more flippant when people said, what's your best find? What's the best thing you've ever found? And we were digging outside Manchester once in the middle of this, miles away from anyone on this hill, finding absolutely nothing, a commercial excavation for a big road scheme, finding absolutely nothing, and then suddenly this white shiny thing appeared. We're like, whoa, what is that? And we're kind of excavating around. And we realised it was a ceramic chicken's egg. For encouraging chickens to lay. So how on earth is that? That became my favourite. What's the best one? I said, well, sounds strange, but ceramic chickens. So as time goes on, you know, you're working in different places, working in the middle of Sheffield, finding things like a locket is quite a special thing to find. You know, these really personal items. People. This is from sort of the 19th century. And working in Sheffield kind of brought me to contact with more recent archaeology. You know, your stratigraphy starts off with tarmac, cobbles, hardcore, you know, and gradually go down, made ground, and you're dealing with stuff from now, you know, from the 20th century right up to now. And that's another thing people ask you is, when does archaeology stop? Well, for me, it doesn't stop. It carries on right from the present day, and it goes in, you know, we can do an archaeology of now. I won't get onto that right now, but so, as my career has changed, I've kind of got, I'm still obviously moving to Orkney. You're blessed with the most remarkable prehistoric archaeology Neolithic sites. You know, you are uncovering amazing carvings at the Nessus Brocker, and you know, I'm still very interested in those, but I've strayed towards being much more interested in the more recent past and archaeology of now and the last few decades, the last few hundred years or whatever. And I think it challenges some of these things about value. Just because something's old, does it mean it's more valuable monetary-wise or just archaeologically-wise? I don't know, think about it. So when I was thinking about what would I stand for, you know, what my favourite object was now, I was sitting at my desk at work and I looked across and I found this. I thought, okay, so I'll take that along. And the reason I thought about this is because it embodies kind of a lot about me, my journey in archaeology, where I am now in Orkney, and lots of things and some of the recent fieldwork and discoveries I've made. Because I'm quite interested in landscape surveying, surface surveying, so it's not necessarily digging things up. Archaeology equals excavation. Or it does a lot of things, but it's also about finding things in the landscape, looking at features and tying it in with lots of different kind of like the natural, the cultural, it's a different thing. So I thought, well, I'll take this along, and if anyone's been over to the west coast of Hoy, to Rackwick, then you'll know what a special place Rackwick is. So as an archaeologist, to spend time in this landscape, you can visit, and visiting Rackwick is certainly something you should do if you haven't. It's the most remarkable kind of place, that huge open bay to the southwest, looking across to Scotland. You can't see the rest of Orkney. You're hidden away by the hills. It's different geology than the rest of Orkney. It's got a huge amount of folk stories. These valleys are powerful places. They're still alive now. And as an archaeologist, when you spend time there, you realise that they still are alive. And then I did a survey there a couple of years ago, 2014 and 15, did a landscape survey of the whole of the township. And you know, the township was your first records are sort of medieval. It doesn't have any prehistoric archaeology. So I thought, can I find any of the answers? No, I can't. Apart from when you go to one of the dwarfy stone and you come into the sort of kind of stuff that's further along the valleys. But the township itself, I've not found anything prehistoric there. So it's a medieval settlement that's developed, you know, through farming. There are deep soils there. They're reliant on the sea, you know, fishing. They're farming the thin soils around the rest of the township. It's expanded out through the post-medieval period, and it's a hard life, I'd imagine, but it's a successful life. People have made their fortune, not fortunes, but they've made their life there, and they've had their children there. And then the township started to attract in the 20th century, and by the sort of 1960s, 70s, Jack Grendel was the only person still farming that township. There's a tragedy when some boys drowned in the burn in the 50s, the school shut. So from being a successful settlement in the township, it retracted down to a place that was on the edge. And it wasn't until you had people like George Mackay Brown, Peter Maxwell Davis moving there, Sylvia Wishart painting there. They had another renaissance of Rackwick, which kind of brought it to people's attention. People started to have second homes there, and the township was kind of saved. So doing a survey, you've got all these different things to try and weave together, the folklore, the archaeology on the ground, the lumps, the bumps, the remains of the buildings. And on the shore, so we're finding like enclosures, we're finding planty trees where they grew their kale, we're finding trackways and banks and all these sorts of things. And on the shore, there's some amazing, we're looking at the old archive photos as well of the township and trying to reconstruct them with some of the local which is a really interesting exercise. And there's amazing pictures of them landing their yawls on the shore, pulling out this huge meter-long cod, just immense fish that you just wouldn't dream of seeing now. And if you stand on the shore at the Noose, which is the area where they pulled the boats up through the stones, and there aren't any kind of noosts like where they rested the boats, the kind of imprint of the boat that they used to winter boats, there's the remains of the winch, and there's an old fisherman's house, which is on a hut, which is on an old map. But by the shore, there are a few stones, like this one. And on the top of the stones, you can see you've got this tar. And this is from when they were hauling the boats up, and they were painting the boats with tar. And Jack said that the last boat there was in about 1974. And they didn't tar boats in 1974. So the tar was probably from probably pre-war, probably, and there's still some bits of it there, and you can see on the top of the shore. But it does mean the top of the beach maybe hasn't changed as much as you think it has. So when I thought about an object that I'd bring, I thought about this one, because I thought it embodied all those different things, and the things that I'm interested in, the things that make me who I am right now and my work in Orkney. And then as I was walking down here, I thought, this is about deep time. And I thought, well, that's great, because we have deep time in my hand, because we have the old red sandstone, which was formed 400 million years ago on the base of the bottom of Lake Orcady, down by the equator somewhere. We've got the bitumen, which you can still smell on the stones, which was formed in, I think, in the Jurassic period, correct me if I'm wrong. But, these oily substances that we now extract and use. You've got probably 10,000 years of stones rolling around the beach since the last glaciation. They could have been around before, but to get these amazing boulders and the sand that surrounds them. And then you've got the fishermen on the shore pulling their fish out of the sea and bringing them up to feed their families. And then in the early 20th century, you've got them propped up using these stones to prop up their boats and painting the bitumen to seal their boats, and it drips slowly onto the stones. And then you've got us wandering around trying to record all this stuff.
I thought you were already smelling archaeological artifacts, so we're now sniffing a bit.